Well, we got a real legendary guy again this week, Slim Peterson. We're out to the Elite Trapping School, and he was generous enough to do this interview. And I really appreciate you doing it, Slim. And
yeah, appreciate you thinking of me.
Yeah, they. So they like. First, Clint wanted me to tell you that Clint Locklear wanted me to tell you he always wanted to beat your record with the Cats and never came close to it. So I know Clint, like a lot of us, look up to you and you know, the stuff you've done promoting trapping and made it where, you know, guys that wanted to make a living in industry, because if it wasn't what you guys, you know, we'd be working at McDonald's or something like that. There would be no industry. Yeah. So, you know, we all thank you for that, you know.
Well, but you have to realize it was a time. It wasn't because I was that good. I certainly was not that good. And I didn't do it by myself. There was me and another partner. We were both going to college, and when in between classes, we'd run check traps and all this stuff. But if I could go back and do it over again and know what I know now, I got double that number.
Yeah.
See, peak of 1080 days, there wasn't any coyotes anywhere. What few fox there was right in the city limits. Bobcats had no competition. They were out in the stubble fields, they were in the creek bottoms, they were up in the hills, they were everywhere. So it wasn't a matter of me being that good.
Well, that's very nice of you to say humbly, but, well, you know, I mean, you know, but the thing is you did something that, you know, other guys during that same time period didn't pull off. So, you know, it's, you know, appreciate you being humble, but, you know, we think of you, you know, as one of the greats. So
yeah, I appreciate that. But like I said, it was just a matter of being at the right time and in the right place.
I think that's everything in life is just timing.
Probably, right. Yeah. Probably right.
To start, you know, before that, like, how did you get into, you know, what, you know, was, you have a parent that trapped, or you just found it, you know, that you were, you know, that found some traps and it was interesting to you, or how did you get into it?
Originally, my grandmother raised me, and she had chickens. And the first thing she happened, of course, the skunk got in the chicken house, and she sent me out to the old shed where there was an old trap. First thing I did was catch my fingers in it. I couldn't, you know, I was pretty young. Had to go in and have her help me take it off. She had broke her leg and was in a wheelchair, so. And I hated trapping.
Well, that's interesting.
Then I went off to college. Didn't know anybody in Billings, and had an entomology class, and I was looking for scorpions and centipedes up in the rocks underneath the cliffs, and seeing bobcat tracks. So me and Jim set a couple, three bobcat traps. And at that time, I was a big cat with all the claws on. If it had no other marks on it, maybe $12.
That was for Montana cats?
Yeah, more like $8, $7, $8. And it was just something to do. So then the next year, Jim and I decided to start at it a little bit more sincere. We still didn't have, I don't think we had more than six traps at the most at that point. And the cats we caught that year were between $12 and $15. So the following year we put in a lot more effort thinking we were going to get $15. Well, we ended up with a $26 average on the 200 we caught.
So.
But the next year, everybody was a cat trapper, and cats don't take the pressure.
No, no.
They're the worst mother there is, and they'll start out with 6-8 kittens, and if they got one or two left in the fall, that's a good mother.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, what year was that? Do you remember what year, you know, around?
61, 62.
61. So, you know, they, I bet that was some wild country back in them days out there, you know, during that time.
Actually, no, because we were trapping right around the city.
Oh, were you?
Of Billings.
And that's where you caught most of the cats, was right around there, right?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, from there to Roundup.
They, I've never trapped out in that area. Never even really been up in there much. You know, I got friends that trap out there and stuff, people I know. But, you know, it's always fascinated me, that area out there. I've been, like, to the Southwest and, you know, down south a bunch. But, you know, that's, you know, that big land you guys, you know, trap out there is, you know, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, like guys dream about going out there trapping, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've done some, you know, great things in some great country, so...
Yeah, all those things together, yeah.
Yep.
Where I was born and raised is... I live not very too far away from there right now. And about 30 miles north of Yellowstone Park.
Uh-huh.
Fantastic country, and unbelievable numbers of different animals and...
Hmm.
And the country's big and rough, and of course I can't enjoy it as much as I used to, but I there's no place on this earth, and I've been all over the United States, but there's no place on earth that I can imagine is any more awe-inspiring than timberline in the high mountains.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Spent a lot of time mountain sheep hunting just so I could spend time there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you live out there your whole life, or did you move to, you know, like, did you, you know, move to any other areas or anything like that, or is it, you pretty much lived in Montana your whole life, and then when you trapped out of state, you know, work out of there?
I did that, but I also, a billionaire by the name of Fred Rowan, who started Childers Baby Company, offered me a job in Georgia, and I moved down there and did that work for 7 years.
Uh-huh.
But even if you're a billionaire, Mother Nature's going to take her course. And so,
that's true.
Yeah. And so then my children didn't like me being there, and so I moved back to Montana.
And probably no regrets on that, you know, looking back on it.
I liked Georgia.
Yeah.
I really did. But it's like every place else, there is no Shangri-La.
Yeah.
There's always things that are derogatory.
Yeah.
Like in Montana, the snow and the cold, I can handle the cold, but I hate the snow.
Yeah.
And down there in Georgia, the heat and humidity in the summertime was just the opposite of what it is there. And,
yeah.
And the big snakes.
Yeah, I can relate. I hate the snakes.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't like the snakes and the bugs, but like I said, there is no Shangri-La. But Georgia treated me well.
I went to Georgia with my dad when I was young. He trapped that in the late 60s. Mm-hmm. And you know, I spent a lot of time down south, and I love the south. I really like the people down there. They're really friendly.
Yeah.
And the food's out of this world, but I agree with you, that because I had thought about moving down to Louisiana. I loved it so much, but that heat and humidity, mm-hmm. and I got Norwegian blood in me, and them two do not mix.
No, they don't. Well, not, you know, when, this bald head of mine, I was wiping the sweat off all the time and apologizing to tell people, I'm sorry, I don't think I'll ever get used to this heat and humidity.
Yeah.
And every time I ever made that excuse, I heard the same answer. Hell, don't let it bother you. I was born and raised here, and I'll never get used to it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now it's a little bit easier. I got air conditioning, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And everything's air conditioned.
It's pretty hard to beat there.
Yeah. Other than Montana, you know, which I, you know, you can tell that you really love it out there. You know, what areas did you trap that you really enjoy trapping? I mean, did you go to, like, South Texas or, you know, it's like, I love trapping at home. But I, you know, I've always loved going somewhere else and, mm-hmm. you know, spreading my wings a little bit. And,
right. And, who don't?
Yeah. Because it seems like what I would always learn, like, you know, it's like at home you get stuck in a rut where right. if I go somewhere else, it's right. like, you know, it's not the same and you see different opportunities.
More attention.
And I've learned more by going out of state than, yeah. you know, just staying at home being in that rut.
Without a doubt. Yep, that's true. Yeah. And I bounced around a lot, an awful lot. I had it counted up one time, but I trapped in an awful lot of different states. I really liked Idaho. When it was allowed, I liked Southern California because of the cats and the gray fox that was there.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't hardly any coyotes there at that time, but the cats and the gray fox were thick. Of course, Georgia, pretty hard to improve on.
When you were in Georgia, were you doing any control work down there or anything
well,
like that?
Well, that's what I was
oh,
doing.
Oh, that's what you were doing.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was doing. It was basically a quail farm.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that had teeth had to go.
Yeah.
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 I trapped a lot of snakes. Yeah. Yeah. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Georgia. I enjoyed Iowa, Missouri, West Texas in the wintertime. I don't know that there's a more pleasant place in the world to be than West Texas in the winter.
Hmm.
Every day it's quiet, still.
Mm-hmm.
65 degrees.
Is that got timber or is that mesquite country over that way?
Well, yeah, mesquite grows everywhere in that part of the world. But,
does it?
There is no timber there.
Mm-hmm.
No.
It's just like mesquite. The whole area is like a lot of mesquite. Because like like if you go up like in northeast Texas up by Longview up in there, you know, they got timber and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then I went like down to South Texas trapping, and the trees kept getting shorter as you went, and pretty soon there wasn't no trees, it was just like mesquite. And when I went down there, I had a hard time. It was like I couldn't see the locations because mm-hmm. Everything looked the same to me. I had to be there for like mm-hmm. you know 2 weeks before I started to be able to pick stuff out. It right. was just like
yeah.
It was like looking at a snowbank, and you're just trying to see the individual.
I think no matter where you go in the timber, that's the way things, initially, that's the way it affects yeah. everybody pretty much. Even the high mountains are probably even worse because the landscape is so steep, so tall, so big.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you can't this steady location because, as you say, you're looking at a wall of timber.
Yeah.
And in time, if you're there a little while and you have been around on all of the trails that are there and can spend some time while you can pretty much take care of yourself. Let me call you back. I'm doing an interview.
A lot of people, you know, it's kind of switching topics. A lot of, you know, me and you, I'd never been officially introduced, you know, till this event. I'd never met you, but I talked to different people that know you and stuff, and every one of them, they all tell me that if there's one person out there that they would pick that knows the mind of a coyote and, you know, what they kind of are thinking. And I understand nobody knows everything, only God does, you know.
That's for sure.
But, you know, but you've studied them enough. I mean, is there anything that guys starting out that you could, you know, tell them about your thoughts on, you know, where you see guys that are starting out or even guys that think they know something, which usually you find out, you know, when you get older, you really don't know nothing, you know. Right. But that might help, you know, some of them guys, kind of somewhat you found out through your, you know, life and, you know, you paid a lot of dues to know what you know, and hopefully everybody out there, you know, whatever you tell them, that, you know, they know you pay the dues and you're given a pretty good morsel, you know.
Part of the reason I'm here for this deal, I spent big end of 60 years doing nothing but trapping.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been very good to me. And I met some wonderful people, but you can't keep taking all the time.
No.
You have to give something back.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm at now that I'm getting old and I can't get around and can't trap like I want to.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for me to give things back so that other people can pick it up from there and expand on it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you definitely have to give back.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
You're doing a good job at it, you know.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I'm trying.
Yeah, but like at this event, you know, I mean, you know, everybody loved having you here, and right. You know, there was, guys, there was like a buzz all the time that you were here. So,
good.
You know, I know everybody really appreciated it.
Well, I appreciate it myself. There's been a good bunch of boys here.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah, we've had fun.
Yeah, you bet.
Like with Coyotes, you know, do you find like it, you know, sometimes like you'll hear guys say that dirt holes won't work in my area, this one won't work in my area. Do you find that there's a reason why that is? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, is it the location they're putting them in, or the sets are just burnt out because they've seen it so many times, or
two things? Talk to anybody that's going to set a coyote trap and he's going to set a dirt hole.
Mm-hmm.
Get on the internet and look at anybody that's trapping coyotes and you're looking at dirt holes.
Yep.
But the other problem, pick up any trapping publication and look at all the people selling coyote lure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if it's me or any of the other big names that are selling coyote lure, the best in the bunch does not smell like something the coyote smells every day.
Mm-hmm.
So a pair of coyotes smell something at a dirt hole they've never smelled before, and it's interesting, smells good, they go over there, one of them gets a caught. The other one doesn't want to go back to that odor again, and he's very leery of a dirt hole. But he finds another partner, and they go down the road, and his other partner goes over there and gets caught again.
Mm-hmm.
Not the same dirt hole, but the same thing. Now that coyote isn't going to go to that odor or a dirt hole.
Mm-hmm.
But then everybody's got to have flat sets at the same location with some other kind of a lure, and I don't care who builds that lure, if it's a pure straight coyote glands, it does not smell like something that a coyote smells every day.
Mm-hmm.
So the third partner that gets caught, that female or whatever, the male, whichever one of those, now is anything that smells different than what they're used to, he or she isn't going anywhere near it.
Mm-hmm.
Much less a dirt hole.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two things that make the big difference.
Let's say you got that type of coyote where, you know, they've recognized that smell, you know, what would you suggest people do? Because it wouldn't matter at that point, like if they did, say, a projection set or anything, because it's also the scent, right? So What would you just, you know, go, you know, for like that type of coyote, go more with a food lure or?
Well, yeah, they still have to make a living.
Yeah.
And what they do to make a living is catch something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Or scavenge something to eat. But it better produce an odor that they smell every day or they're not going near it.
Mm-hmm.
And be presented quite reasonable so that their attention is on whatever is putting the odor out instead of looking for a trap.
Mm-hmm. So basically make it, you know, so it's almost like when you said that, I was thinking like for lynx trapping, like you'll have the bait tied to the tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a real visual. And, you know, not that you tie a bait to the tree, but it'd be the same formula. you're drawing their attention on that, so they're not looking at the trap down there. Is, you know, that's basically what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yep. I've been telling people for the last 2 days, coyotes have exceptionally good eyesight, exceptionally good ears, unbelievable nose. But if they see something, they're not going over there to it until they have circled and got downwind and their nose has told them what it is.
Mm-hmm.
If they hear something, they're not going over there until their nose has told them it's okay. So they depend on their nose. They've got all these other instincts. They got curiosity. They on and all the other things that we've got. So if you're going to try to trap coyotes, you have to use every one of his instincts against him.
Mm-hmm.
And present it as naturally as you possibly can. And then, like you're talking about, you want to have his attention drawn on something he can see so that he doesn't put his nose down.
Mm-hmm.
Just as he crosses over the top of the trap. We want him to have his head up so he's looking at that
mm-hmm.
eye appeal and curiosity and that stuff. And so that's
like to do that, what are you talking about? Like, you know, to keep his, you know, to fool his senses and like do that, you know, to keep him focused on what you want him focused on rather than on the trap. You know, what are you talking about? Like, you know, what type of setup are you talking on that?
The setup is immaterial. The big thing is you need something visual
mm-hmm.
for him to see that he understands instead of guessing about.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you are trying really hard to make him guess what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I use to do that is take a white food plastic sack, put a shovel full of dirt in it, roll it up, now you have a volleyball white sack.
Mm-hmm.
Put that out in any field and you're going to see it for how long? A long ways away.
All the way from the other end.
Right. And or put it out any place, you're going to see it a long ways away. They're going to drift to it, try to figure out what it is. And of course, they're going to go downwind of it. You don't want him to go to that sack because it's not anything he's interested in when he gets there.
Mm-hmm.
So 20 to 50 yards away, you want him to have to pass by a really good set with a really good odor to it mm-hmm. so that as he's passing downwind, you go, oh, whoa, wait a minute, I got to check this out.
Mm-hmm.
That visual diverted his attention till you got him to where you wanted him.
And then he's there and he doesn't have time to get all weirded out, right?
Yeah, and what I do, the other thing I do, see that edge line where all the heavy thick brush is along them grass on here?
Yep.
Go to that brush, that heavy brush with a shovel, make a trail, a narrow trail, back in there, throw that same volleyball size back in there from, I don't know, from here to the back of this vehicle, where here's the open ground, here's the all the brush, and they get up there and they look up that trail and can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want him going up there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've walked up this trail on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want him attracted to what odor is there. I want the rankest, strongest odor I can come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Rotten, I don't care about what it is. I just want it really strong. So that when he gets up there where that trail is, now he's stopping and he's looking up there. His attention is over here on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want... got it in my pocket. A white rock sitting right at the trail.
Mm-hmm.
Now it stands out like a sore thumb.
Yep.
He's gonna drift to it as he's looking up here, trying to figure out what that is. I don't want any odor at all on it.
Mm-hmm.
I just want him to drift towards it, but on the downwind side, right beside it, I want to try.
Hmm. So you're using
a diversion.
The diversion. You know, it's almost like watch the hand, and then you get him with the other one.
The diversion and the curiosity thing.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Huh.
Yep. Like I say, use all our instincts against them.
Well, no, I could see that. You know, now the way you're describing doing it, I mean, I could see in my mind picturing exactly why that would work, and you know, you didn't just come up with that the first day out there on the trap line when you got your finger caught, did you?
No, not really. Yeah, in fact, the two of them kind of took quite a little while to develop. Yeah. I admit that.
Yeah. Well, I could see that. You know,
In the wintertime, that white sack is worthless, so I use a black sack.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing is, I appreciate, like that information. You know, I mean, guys will use that and they'll pass it down. And I really appreciate, guys that come up with that stuff. Because, dirt holes or any of the sets that, I use and I help people to learn, I didn't come up with any of that. You know, my dad taught me, and then somebody, he learned it stuff from people. You know, it's like, monkey see, monkey do. But a lot of that stuff we use today, like what you're talking about, I mean, you came up with it, So, I mean, there's a difference between what you've done in your life and in the people afterward, Joe. I mean, so it's really neat to, be able to use a lot of that stuff.
But you have to stop and realize I spent 50 years in the summer months doing predator control work.
Mm-hmm.
And that animal that's killing livestock, I have no choice. I have to kill that animal. And I got very desperate at different times, and that's where I come up with some of these ideas to attempt something totally different that may or may not work.
Yeah.
I can tell you several that don't work worth a darn.
That's what I was telling the guys out there on, at the school today. I said, a lot of the stuff that I've went out and done, and I'm sure it's same with you. I said I've had, 100 failures for every half of success.
Right. Exactly.
Like you're talking about doing the predator control work. I went down and did some of that in South Texas, and it really wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. Dealing with the ranch managers and I didn't do it a lot like Clint did or anything like that. I went a couple times and decided, you know what, I'm a fur trapper. I should just stick with that, because, they want them all killed. And, my thing is I don't want to fight with the last guy. You know the difference between a predator control guy and a trapper. I just want to go in there and get the cream and pull the easy ones off and move to the next spot, where then you have to go in and, deal with all the tough stuff. And if there's one that you really a sucker, you got to deal with him.
Right. Without any ifs, ands, buts, or maybes, the very best coyote trapper that I ever knew in my lifetime was George Good from Circle, Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And George loved to fur trap as well as do predator control work. And the difference, as he explained it to me, was when you are fur trapping, you don't trap an area for more than a week. And every week you have to get on new ground,
mm-hmm.
and you leapfrog.
Yeah.
Start pulling the traps at the back here and moving them, and you're leapfrogging so that you're on new coyotes every week. And you don't worry about those that you didn't catch. You just keep leapfrogging because you skim the cream and go.
Yeah.
And with predator control work, the coyotes are still the easy part. John Q. Public is the SOB.
Mm-hmm.
And you spend as much time with the difficult stuff as you do with the easy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you diversify. Instead of just trapping, you start trapping, snaring, calling, shooting, shooting out of the airplane, out whatever it takes to kill them animals. And it's a total different, the two are not related other than the fact that you do do some trapping, doing predator control work.
Yeah, I found that out in a hurry.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
My thing is, I don't, you know, like dealing with the people. So that was, you know, like the landowners and, you know, stuff like that. I will with, like, farms and getting permission like that. But it's not a, where I'm answering to them, you know.
Right.
And, I think it was the answering to somebody. I've had that problem my whole life.
Well, what do you think I do what I do?
You're probably the same way, and... You're just better at pushing it down than I was, probably.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm better at walking away without blowing my stout sometimes, maybe.
Yeah. But, as far as getting, new guys getting into trapping, you're trying to go get out there, and pass something on. And, I know we all appreciate that. And, like the guys, there were some new guys here today that, that I talked to them and they said that, the stuff you taught them here was invaluable, like next week you're going down to Minktoberfest. I'm sure you'll share a lot of good stuff down there with the guys. Have a lot of fun. And I'm sorry, I'm going to be missing it, but.
Yep, for sure.
But, thank you. I'll definitely chew a piece of your gum. But, are you, because like you said, you weren't able to get around like you used to be, and do you still get to do any trapping, or do you just, educating people now and being involved in trapping that way?
I'm sharing other people's trap and experience is what I'm doing because I can't do it anymore. I have MS, which is muscular sclerosis. I get down, I can't get back up, or vice versa sometimes.
That's how it was with my dad. His knees had gotten real bad. He'd fly down to Louisiana with me, and that's what he said. He said he just loved to just ride along. He was a heck of a map man, and a good map man is invaluable. But he told me that, he was talking about himself, that, when you get, you're most dangerous as a trapper, you're too old and too beat down to do it anymore. And that was the most depressing part of, for him was because he didn't have the convention to go to and, didn't have a lot of people to talk to other than me about trapping. So, I'm glad you were able to get out and do stuff like that because, I mean, everything you have upstairs is what everybody wants, much or more than just about anybody about, coyotes and how they're going to react and, basically any question that somebody would have,
Well, like I tell people all the time, the only difference between me and you is I've had time, been fortunate enough to have a job where I could put in 360 days of the year. I've made way more mistakes than you. And that's the only difference between us. I admit that. And I mean that, seriously. I've been the luckiest man that I know. And like I said, my grandmother raised me, broke her leg when I was 8 years old and ended up in a wheelchair till I was 16. Little boys were to be seen and not heard. And all them old people that would come to visit her, the man had a job, hated it, but he'd kill to keep it because they'd all been through the Depression. And they was working for that pie in the sky when they could turn 60 years old at that time and retire and do all the wonderful things they wanted to do. 58, 59, 60, a lot of them died. The ones that did make it, their friends were dead. And they found out they couldn't go fishing every day. They couldn't go hunting every day. They couldn't go traveling around the world like they wanted to. All the things that they thought they were going to do. And pretty quick, they sat around shriveled up and died.
Mm.
And I, little boy in that corner, listened to them stories over and over again. And my grandmother was a stickler for you make a dime, you put 9 cents of it in your pocket and save it.
Which was the Depression era, yep.
And I'm sitting there at the time thinking, why? So it can end up like all these people and live a miserable existence,
mm-hmm.
to die a miserable existence. So I have lived the other way.
Mm-hmm.
It's cost me, you have to make everything in life as a trade-off. But I pretty much made a living most of my life doing what I want to do. And there are very few people that can say that.
Yeah.
My three kids, I'm very proud of them. I stuck around until they were on their own. All three of them have their PhD degree.
That's impressive.
Well, I know I'm not that smart, so more power, I'm just proud of them, bottom line. But I did have a big part in raising them. You know, a kid that's worth his darn at all is going to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
There is no shame in making mistakes.
No.
Everybody alive makes mistakes.
Yep.
The thing is, you want to learn from that mistake so that you can try to do something better the next time around.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very proud of my kids because I think all three of them have done a very good job of that.
Hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
They, do you have grandkids too?
My oldest boy and his wife can't have any children. She had female problems, mm-hmm. of some sort. But the youngest boy has two boys. My daughter has two girls.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I got two granddaughters and two grandsons. I always say I don't know how you could have the grandkids without the kids. But I sure love the grandkids.
Yeah, I know what you mean. if you could, it would be better.
I think it's. With age, with my kids, I would never have let them ride a bicycle, through Walmart. With the grandkids, I'm like, go ahead and ride the bike through Walmart. What do I care,
Right.
And I just think it's with age, you kind of mellow out a little bit.
Right.
But,
Well, you will hear about my youngest grandson, I guarantee you that.
Mm-hmm.
He already has a scholarship to go to college with the Baltimore Orioles.
Really? Huh.
And the day he graduates, if he goes and plays ball, he's going to be in the millions of dollars.
Hmm. Well, that's impressive. I bet you're really happy about that.
Well, yeah, obviously, but I'm just proud of it, but I'm proud of my son for pushing him in that direction, whatever, too, but... His fastball has been clocked at 94 miles an hour.
Hmm.
So he's going to be a pitcher. So you will hear about Ben Peterson. You will hear
Ben
that
Peterson.
Name.
Yeah. Well, everybody, you watch for Ben Peterson because that'll be interesting to see, mm-hmm. Him playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't watch a lot of baseball anymore, but I'll guarantee if your grandson's on there, I'll be watching.
Well, I don't really care to watch baseball. I never like to play baseball. It's too slow for me, and it's boring. But
I'm proud
of him. He's doing what he's doing.
I know one game you'll probably be tuned into when he's out there pitching for the major leagues.
Right. Yeah.
I did the interview with Russ, and that's Russ Carman, and that's the thing that in the end of it, that one of the things that came up was is exactly what you said about, everything wasn't easy, but in the end of, where he's at now, he's lived his whole life did exactly what he wanted to, and mm-hmm. and you know, and everything wasn't perfect, but no. but he said nothing else. He lived his life the way he did, and he got to do a lot of things that a lot of other people, you know, never went and did. Right. You know,
right.
And there, I mean, in the end, I mean, that's you know, important. But the good thing with, you know, a lot of guys, you know, they, and me included. You know, I went trapping, you know, I mean, I've been trapping my whole life, and when I went trapping, you know, it cost me because like you said, there's a trade-off for everything. You know, I got divorced over going out of state trapping, and you know, and there was a price to pay, and but you know, it seems like with the trappers, like, you know, your kids all got raised, everything you did, your kids still got raised properly, right. Russ's kids got raised properly, you know, and all my kids were raised properly. So, you know, I mean, it's something to be said about, you know, people in the trapping community that, you know, I mean, you still do this stuff, but, you know, can have some, and it made the home life is tough sometimes, you know.
I was probably, I don't know, close to 30 years old. Maybe I was already 30 years old. I don't know the exact age. But I was caught up in that nonsense in the world in high school. All you hear, you have to go to college, you have to go to college, you never survive if you don't go to college. Mm-hmm. So I go to college, and I never did get a degree, I'll admit that, because I finally, the hell with this. I being taught things that I know were wrong mm-hmm. in biology class.
Yep.
And it would made me raise my eyebrows and wonder about some of the other classes.
Mm-hmm.
But you still have to make a living.
Yeah.
So I hustled around at a lot of different jobs with B.F. Goodrich Tire Company. the best job I ever had, without a doubt, was selling Kenworth trucks, making big wages. Pulling down big commissions, had a brand new car given to me every year. But I was on the road four nights of the week. And I came home on Friday night, like I always did, late. My son had just turned 7 years old. It was his birthday, I had forgot it. He was asleep on the couch waiting for his dad. The wife was mad. Long story short, after all the commotion was over with and they all went to bed, I did not go to bed. I sat there and thought about that. We lived right across the street from the biggest, nicest park in Billings at that time, but you didn't dare let the kids go over there unless you was with them or watching them every second because of all the strange things that happened in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about that a lot, and I thought, what I was doing when I was 7 years old, being raised with no supervision at all
mm-hmm.
in that small town, and if I was in trouble, my grandmother was the first one that heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know how that small towns are.
And it doesn't sound like you want to go back and face her with where you've been in trouble.
Right. So I, when the wife got up, I told her I was going to go quit my job. She goes, "Yeah, right." I did.
Mm-hmm.
A week later, I moved to Jordan, Montana, and started a little tire store. I didn't have enough money to do a good job of that, but I did it, and I was making money, enough to live on. But I was tending bar at night, and on the weekends, then I started trapping. And from the, I didn't have a garage, so the skinning and all that stuff was going on in the tire store. The sheepmen would come in and see all the furs hanging around, and they one thing led to another, and then a county commissioner come in and said, "You know, we've been talking about hiring somebody on a full-time basis through the summer. Would you be interested in doing that?" Yeah, I would.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can fur trap all winter. I can trap. Yeah, I did.
Best of both worlds.
Yeah, and that's where I started as a full-time trapper. I didn't last very long because the government can't stand to have anybody doing that without them having their fingers in it.
Yeah.
And Within a year or so, I quit. And then the sheep men come running to me, want to know what it would take to keep me there. And I told them, I'm not going to work for the county. I'm not going to make a liar out of myself on a piece of paper for a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so they asked me to put something together, and I did. I started Slim Peterson Incorporated, and with a reason behind that, because I knew the federal people was not going to allow me to do that job without them trying to interfere.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing they did was run to the Forest Service and the BLM and tell them that nobody could do predator control work except federal predator control people on federal land.
Mm-hmm.
But since that was exactly what I anticipated they were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the Forest Service and the BLM managers came to me and told me I could no longer trap on their place, I'm going, wait a minute. This is federal land.
Mm-hmm.
I can go play on there anytime I want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you can't do predator control. I said, wait a minute. I work for Slim Peterson Incorporated. I'm the president. I know whether I'm goofing off and playing or whether I'm working. And they hated it. But they said, well, you're pushing the fine line. I said, let's take it to the local court. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
They wasn't about to do that.
Mm-hmm.
26 years later, I was still doing that.
Yeah. Was it at the end of the 26, was it as bad with them, or it just became a normal thing and it wasn't a problem, or did you always have problems with them?
While I was doing that, I had problems with them.
Mm-hmm.
But the last 5 or 6 years, they dropped me.
Mm.
They were still trying stupid little dumb things. Said I couldn't, I can't remember, there was a certain trap, the 3N,
mm-hmm.
at that time was the only real coyote trap out there, and mm-hmm. they told me that I couldn't own any of them because those were all government traps. And no, wait a minute, I bought them. We don't care, they're government traps.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I kind of lost my cool, and I get on the phone and called Washington, D.C., and called the head of the animal damage control people.
Mm-hmm.
And told him, I said, by your own rules and regulations, you people cannot compete with private enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's right. We damn sure, you know. I said, okay, well, your people out here are trying to put me out of business and competing with me doing it by trying to do it cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Long silence. We visited a little bit more, and he said, I'll get back with you, which he never did.
You're still waiting.
But he called them people and told them to knock it off, and I never heard another incident about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. So you never ever trapped for like the USDA or any of them?
Well, yeah, I did that first,
did.
Like I told you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm not a good little soldier. I can't click my heels and salute. And
see, I knew that you had that streak in you. It's hard to be an independent guy and go out there and spend a lot of time alone and not have that in you.
Yeah.
I knew it was there.
Yeah, well, it's true. When I quit, it came down, it was a priority item that I had to get up at 4:21 in the morning and be at mile marker such and such at 4:21 in the morning and listen for morning dove coos.
Mm.
And I had to drive, I don't remember, 17 miles an hour to the next mile marker. And if I seen a morning dove sitting on a post someplace, I had to record that.
Mm.
And I had to sit there so many minutes and listen for morning dove coos.
Mm.
And about, I don't know, there were 20 some miles of doing just that.
Hmm.
And I get down one day and I'm sitting there listening to the morning dove coos, and here comes a sheep man pulling up, and he said, you see a coyote? And I said, no. Well, you broke down? No. What are you doing? Listening to morning dove coos.
There was probably a part of you that didn't even want to say really.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So
that just shows you, though, how stupid the government is. Oh, I mean, yeah. You got one of the most effective Caillou killers out there, and they got him listening to Mourning Dove. I mean, that's ridiculous on his face. Yeah. You know,
that's typical government, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I quit, and then started my own business, like I said, and everything's been good.
But no, they probably hadn't got into using the computers and the paperwork as heavy then, you know, when because my buddy got wrapped up with you know, the government trap, and he went up to South Dakota, and you know, everybody thinks that, you know, now that you know would be like a government trapper, that's all you do, and you know, like when you started with the sheepmen. And it really was that way. The guys still think when they get in as a government trapper. But like Norm said, you know, he says, I do more paperwork than I ever do trapping. He says, you have to log every single thing. And
yep.
And he was only there for a year. And he said, I've had enough. I'll go back. In fact, he went back to Georgia.
Yeah. Anybody's worth a damn ain't going to stay there and do it. That's all there is to it.
No. Yeah. And they had one guy when Norm was going to get hired in there. And they told him, well, you know, we got a guy, and Norman to find out the guy that only ever caught one caillou, you know, and they hired him in front of him. Yep. And, you know, and the ranchers, they didn't know that guy, you know. But, no, it would have been a lot more fun doing it like you did in the beginning, trapping for the sheepmen, or you're trapping, you know, all year round, doing it the way you want to do it, you know, rather than working with a government agency.
Well, I never set out to achieve any particular thing except to stop the killing.
Yeah.
But the National Trappers Association recognized me for a lot of little things.
Mm-hmm.
First thing, I won the Pioneer Award, and they put me in the Trappers Hall of Fame in 2006. And just this last year, the Achievement Award, and it's a one of.
That was this last year?
This year.
Yeah, and I was there and watched you get that one. Okay. Yeah, you were sitting right up in the front. Yeah, I was standing in the back.
Okay, well, that's the one I'm the most proud of, without any doubt, because, like I said, it's a one of. Nobody else has ever received that one.
Yeah, that's definitely something to be proud of.
Yeah, but again, none of that was anything that I had set out to do. It's just things that come about.
But the thing is, you're just out living your life, but you affect a lot of people. So, you know, that's why the people. I'm looking at a picture of the ward right now. Presented to Larry Slim Peterson for a lifetime of dedication, inspiration, and contribution to the Trappers of America. Presented by the National Trappers Association at the 60th Annual Convention, Springfield, Missouri, 2019. Yep. And I was standing right in the back and watched him. I think it was Chris McAllister handed it to you.
Yeah, well, good. Yeah, well, yep. Chris and I go back a while.
Yep.
He was the first trap, him and Scott Huber were the first two trap line students that I'd ever had.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, you looked a little more dressed up there. Yeah, you're not going to wear the same outfit out here on the trap line. Huh. No, that's a real achievement.
Yeah.
You know, like you say, nobody else has ever got one. So, right. I mean, that takes it up a notch.
Yep, I'm very proud of it.
Well, you should.
I'm proud of all of them, but that's the one I'm the proudest of. I admit it.
Yep. No, there's nothing wrong with that. You definitely earned it. But, well, anyways, you got another picture?
That's the rest of the plaques. You probably have to expand them out to see what they are. But.
Oh yeah, National Trappers Association Hall of Fame, Larry Slim Peterson. They're all down the side of a wall. The Pioneer Award. What do they give the? What's the Pioneer for?
the work I did on the snares.
Oh.
When I first started doing that, if you ordered a coyote snare, you got a 12-inch, enough to make a 12-inch loop with a swivel on the end of it, and then you have to use wire to fasten that off on.
Mm-hmm.
You ordered a fox snare, you got enough to make an 8-inch loop with a swivel on the end of it, and you had to fasten that off with wire.
Oh, okay.
It never made any sense to me at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the first trapping book that I wrote, I brought all that up and talked about snares should be 8, 10, 12 feet if possible, or 5 foot at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
Today, everything is that way.
Yep. So it was revolutionary.
Well, it was different.
Yeah. Yep. And then the Hall of Fame one, that put you in with a, you know, you got the one that was the only you got, but the Hall of Fame put you in with some big hitters, you know.
Yeah, I'm yeah, there's, like I said, I'm pretty proud of all of them.
Yeah.
That the one Hall of Fame, the small one. I come up with his name now. He was the first guy that started Trapper's World.
Mm-hmm.
Don something.
Oh, Don Shoemaker.
Shoemaker.
Yep.
Yep. Anyhow, he sold that business, and I wrote for him while I was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started some other business, and now he started this thing with trappers in general. He's got a name for it, and I can't come up with it. But I was the first one that won the Hall of Fame. Mike Marciotta is the only other one I know that's won it in the last 5 years.
So. Hmm. Well, that's pretty impressive.
And it voted on by the trappers that he has decided belong to the membership.
Okay. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about now. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, because that makes a big difference if it's voted on, you know, by the trappers and
yep.
you know.
Yeah, it is. Yep. That's what I'm saying. Yep.
Yep. That's just like with the you know football players you know giving their own award you know means a lot.
Yeah, you better believe it. Yeah, yep. It does.
But I won't keep you any longer. I really appreciate you know you doing the interview, and I know a lot of the guys out there appreciate. They wanted to hear your story and it's been a real fun weekend. And
I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, you're headed to Don Powell's, and I'm headed to Illinois Trappers Convention.
Right.
But I did look ahead in the forecast, and it's got trapper weather because it's supposed to be like 60 degrees down there. So, you know, I'm ready.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. It was an honor meeting you.
Well, thank you, sir.
All right.